Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. I'm Amy Frost. Have you ever thought about doing your British Horse Society stages? You can get stages 1 to 5 and you end up with a qualification. Well, this year I decided to start my stage 1 and finally I'm ready for my assessment, but I'm a little bit nervous. I don't know what to expect and I haven't done exams for a really long time. So my guest today is Julian Campbell. He's the Technical Development Manager at the British Horse Society and he's going to explain what we can expect from an assessment. What do we need to do to prepare and why we shouldn't be nervous. This is Horse Hour. How are you, Julian?
I'm very well today. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. Really, really good. And super excited to speak to you because, as you know, I'm trying to do my stages.
Right.
And the worst thing is I don't have a lot of time. So I'm so time poor that I'm trying to get through them super quickly. So I'm thinking, right, if I can get through to my stage 3 by the end of the year, then great. Next year I can maybe go out and become, you know, instruct a few children and just feel better equipped. The problem is, Julian, we're in September. And I still haven't completed stage 1 yet.
Right, okay.
So it's just time, but I am at that state, at that point, where I've got to say I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I didn't really choose to do this as a career as such, you know, because I've already got a career, but it was more because I wanted to be more informed as a podcast host, for one, as a horse owner, really, and now I've got a livery yard, and I really felt that I couldn't preach about rules and regulations and insurances and qualifications if I didn't have any. So going through the stage 1, I'm fascinated with how little I know.
Right.
You know, when really, most of us, I think, we think we know quite a lot. But guess what? We don't. So what was it then? I mean, we will talk in detail in a moment about the assessments and what to expect of the assessments. But what was it that led you to the technical development side, the assessments and the helping people with their qualifications?
Well, I think we know that the horse industry changes a little bit as time goes on. And things that we did do maybe 10 or 20 years ago, now through research, we know that we've got to do a better way and we've got to relate to our horses in a better way. So I think it was time to look at the qualifications as they were and determine those things that maybe we didn't necessarily do anymore, but identify those things that we did and aim to continue to do them properly. Now, this also went alongside the perception by many candidates that taking an assessment at BHS was quite a nerve-wracking experience. And therefore, because it was a nerve-wracking experience, they often didn't perform at their best. So not only have we tried to reorganise the syllabus and the specification into a more practical basis, and I think I probably want to highlight that quite considerably, really, that the assessment, particularly the stage 1, stage 2 assessments, focuses very much on what a candidate can do practically. Now, they would be asked questions to support their practical knowledge, but it is very much about what can they actually do. Can they actually do the things that it says on the syllabus in a practical way that would allow them to look after their horses, allow them to work in a stable yard with the welfare of the horse in mind? So I think that was very much the driver for changing the syllabus and specification. But at the same time, we're very conscious that what we've tried to do is make the environment for the candidate as relaxed as possible. So therefore, rather than them working in groups, they're working with one assessor throughout the day. And that assessor sees them in all aspects of the work. And the day is able to run in a logical pattern, with the emphasis being on giving the candidate the time to practically do their work, trying to put them at ease so that they can work at their best. They're not having to go to another assessor or another examiner at a different part of the assessment, but they have that same assessor from the introduction at the beginning and the welcome at the beginning through each part of the stage assessment. And that really, from the candidate point of view, seems to be appreciated.
I think it's a great idea purely because there's two things from what you were saying. Our industry, we do tend to think that if we don't know the answer, we feel like we should know. So I think it's very easy to shut down, especially with other peers, you know, or other people. I can imagine being in a group and feeling like I don't want to say the answer in case I get it wrong. But equally, the old school way of equestrianism is you should know the answer, and assessors are seen as quite scary. But this new generation of the British Horse Society, I love, you're all so friendly.
Well, we are trying. But I think we also see that in many cases, there could be more than one answer. If we're putting on rugs and, you know, do we put on the front strap before we do up the strap that goes under the horse's tummy? Well, really and truly, as long as the horse is secure when we're doing it, it probably doesn't matter an awful lot which way round straps go. As long as candidates have got a reason why and they can work safely and they look after their horses well, so the welfare of the horse is a prime consideration, but the emphasis is very much on one-to-one and practical work within what they're doing at the point of assessment.
So I'm guessing you just have to be able to explain the reasons why you're doing things. So, for example, I might put a rug on differently in the stable as to when I'm out in the field and it's really windy. I noticed this when I was going through my rug section, actually. I mean, I have had horses a long time, but you don't even think about the reasons why. You know, I love how you fold and unfold a rug and whip it off, and it's neat. It's like my OCD loves this. It's already folded, ready for me to put away. But you know... when I actually have to think about that process and logically, you know, now you are telling me to think about the reasons why I do things. And for example, you know, if it's out windy in the field and I might do the tail and put the tail bit on before I do the sir singles, belly straps.
Yeah.
Whilst in the stable, that might be the first, second, third thing that I do. It's not so windy. It's not so much of a priority. And I guess it's the learning the reasons, making me think, why am I doing this?
I think it is. But often when you're doing a practical task in an assessment, it can be that the answer, the theory behind it, is quite naturally shown by the way in which you do the task. So if you put a rug on and you sit the rug just over the withers with enough room to bring it back and adjust it, and then you do up the front and you put your hand under the rug and around the withers to check for the pressure or lack of, which is what it should be, then not only are you putting the rug on correctly, but actually you're demonstrating an understanding that if you put your hand in a certain place or you do up the front straps or the belly straps and you leave a hand's width between the straps that cross over and the horse's tummy, then basically you're not only showing that you're doing it correctly, but you're showing your knowledge of that particular task. So very often when I'm advising candidates going into an assessment of this nature, that they would do something like that to show that they have an understanding, which then means the questioning is comparatively limited because the questioning will revolve around those things that the assessor maybe has not seen.
Is it so much a pass and fail, Julian, or is it more of a slightly incorrect answer, but it's not so, I don't know how to explain it, more like a traffic light system, really?
I think that would depend on the nature of the strength and weakness. If somebody is, for example, slow to put on a rug, but yet the rug is on safely and the horse is secure throughout, then the judgment may well be, well, needs to be a bit more familiar with the putting on the rug, but the rug is actually put on well. And that would then tend to indicate the candidate was at the right sort of standard. Whereas if the candidate was really struggling to get the rug on, they couldn't get it over the horse's back, or it was put on in the wrong place, then unfortunately that may be a not to standard because of the way in which they're doing it. So I think it's a little bit some and some. Each part of the assessment is split into what we call learning outcomes. And in the stable care part, in the horse care part, there are two sections, and each of those sections has a number of learning outcomes which the candidate will do on the day of the assessment. Now, those learning outcomes have to freestand, but there is some ability to be able to look at the candidate as a whole and to be able to sometimes signpost and assist the candidate in getting in the right sort of direction. Would you like to do that again? Or if you were going to do that again, would you do it any differently? How would you adjust that particular strap for safety? Or what do you think about the adjustment or fit of a particular strap or part of that particular equipment? So all the way through, the assessor, if need to, is trying to not do the work for the candidate, but trying to conjure up the way in which they direct the candidate and the way in which they question the candidate is trying to encourage them in the right direction to do the tasks correctly.
It sounds like a brilliant way of learning as well. Do you do education days where we could go and I think some of your BHS riding schools do, don't
yes,
they? Where we can go we and
do.
Spend some time with them?
Yeah, many of our approved establishments will offer particular bespoke training, which is either in small groups or individual for assessments that candidates are working for. And I think the sort of thing also to point out, particularly with stage one, stage two assessments, is it is about working in a way that we would normally work on the yard. So you're not really going to be asked to do something which is not normal yard practice. So in stage one, you'd be mucking out a horse, you'd be putting on tack, saddle and bridle. It would be saddle and bridle that belongs to that particular horse. You would be talking about its comfort and its safety. You'd take the tack off, you'd put on a rug, and it would be the same idea that you would put on a rug that this horse may normally wear. So there is nothing within those levels of assessment that is not part really of day-to-day care of the horse, whether it be the practical things in the stable, tacking up, grooming, whether it be some of the practical things that are outside of the stable, cleaning a bridle, or it's feeding the horse and preparing the food for the horse. But everything that is contained within those assessments are things that we would be doing on a daily or a regular basis, depending on the time of year.
It sometimes feels that, the youngsters coming through, because some of your stages are for 14-year-olds. And that
yes,
was the one thing that I kept thinking was, it's okay, Amy, if a 14-year-old can do this, you can definitely do it. But actually, it's like taking your driving test again. You know, when you've been driving for 20 years, you've picked up some of the worst habits that I genuinely have to think, you know, where, how do I tie up? Am I tying up the correct way? And is it safe to shut the door behind me? Or should I, you know, leave it slightly open in case I want to get out quickly?
Yeah.
You know, those are all things that that it's making me think as a you know, a horse owner. It's making my brain work, and it's quite fascinating. And I do feel that more people really should do these qualifications so that we're all a little bit better educated, and then we might not get the nastiness in the yard so much of people thinking they know more than others. If we're all on the same level playing field, this might help a little bit. But say my next stage then, Julian, is I'm there ready for my assessment now. So could you, for those of us that are ready, could you please talk us through maybe what we need to expect when we go there for the day? So you mentioned earlier,
sure,
that if we just do stage one, because it's easier, I'm sure each of the stages it gets a little bit more complicated, but not the nitty-gritty detail of what the stage is about. But you mentioned earlier that we're working with one instructor one assessor that will take us through. Is that one-on-one, or would there be a group of four of us? And would we get to know each other before?
Usually the answer is that if you have all of the information from the office about where the centre is, so address and what to wear, which is also within the skills records. And although the skills record is not compulsory for stage one, we actually do recommend that candidates working for any of the stages would work with their regular instructor or trainer and work through the skills record, because it's a very good indicator as to what they will be expected to do on the day of the assessment. Our centres where the assessments take place are all approved. Usually when you pitch up at an assessment day, there are signs and there is somebody to tell you where to go. All of the candidates will tend to have a meeting area, so we'll have the opportunity to say hello to fellow candidates and find out a little bit like where are the refreshments and are there any refreshments and that sort of thing. The assessors will usually come in and meet the candidates as a group and welcome the candidates and tell them which candidates are working with which assessor. Now, usually there would be three candidates working with an assessor at any one time. But we don't do that as groups. What we tend to do at the start of the day is the allocated assessor will do a little bit of welcoming, introduce themselves, find out who is who. Also make sure that there is a clear means to identify individuals at the point of assessment as well. So we've now taken to using eventing type tabards, which has the first name of the candidate on the front with their number and a number on the back. Now, that means that straight away the assessor, if they do get confused with names, is straight away going to know who they're talking to. So there is that intro and the identification at the start of the assessment, which gives the candidates the opportunity to get to know their assessor. They usually...
So I'd have a tabard that, say, has number one on it or number two.
You would, yeah.
I quite like that because it gives me, I don't know, when you're yourself, you feel a little bit more raw. But when no one knows your name, it doesn't matter if you get it wrong. I'm just number two today. It's brilliant.
But what we normally do is we'd normally put your first name on the tabard at the front. So, and the reason being, if you're then talking close contact in the stables, then the assessor will know who you are and can talk to you by your first name. But if you're riding and you're at the opposite end of a 40-metre arena, then they can see your number at a distance. So that's all checked at the beginning. Hats are checked to make sure they're at a current standard, and the membership details are also checked to make sure everybody comes with an identity and their membership card. And then the assessment day begins.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Usually, most assessors will say, this is what we're going to do and this is where we're going to go to, and also tells you where each part of the yard is, so that if you've got an opportunity for a break during the morning or during the day, you know where to go to have a break, you know where to go to have a drink. So all of those things are sort of done through the morning. Now, at the start, you'll either go off in a group of three with your assessor to ride, or you would go off and start the stable management. Now, I hasten to say, having said that we weren't working in groups earlier on, that is still the case. So although one assessor is going off with three candidates, effectively those candidates, whenever anything is discussed on a one-to-one. Each candidate will be allocated a horse and a stable. So the three candidates will have a horse each, and the assessor will introduce how you're going to work through, if it's stable management or horse care you're starting off with. Each assessor will just clarify and explain how the stable management, Section A and Section B of the stable management, will work. Now, usually if it's me, I will start off by saying, we'll just talk a little bit health and safety before we begin. What's the first thing you do before you go into the stable? And then we'll begin. And I try to run my assessments in a way that things link very nicely one after the other. So candidates will first of all be asked to muck out. So they'll choose their stable, they'll have their stable, they'll muck out. They'll go on from mucking out to taking them up to the muck heap. They'll keep the area of the yard they're working in tidy. They'll then go on from mucking out to grooming. And the brief is usually show how you would do a complete grooming of the horse, particularly knowing that you're going to put a saddle and bridle on it in a little while. They'll go from grooming to putting on saddle and bridle. They'll go from saddle and bridle to taking the saddle off, taking the horse out of the stable, leading it in hand. Then they'll come back, finish that particular part of their assessment off, and put a rug on. And then they'll be asked a few questions about feeding. So they'll go to the feed room. We might go to the field and have a look at the field, so we can talk about the behaviour of the horse inside and outside. And during that latter period, they'll also be asked to clean a bridle. Now, if the riders are going off, the candidates are going off to ride, then the riding will take place in a large indoor or outdoor school, depending on the weather at the time. And it was usual that there could be anything up to six riders in a large arena at any one time. And the riding will usually involve getting on, checking your tack to make sure you can get on safely, getting on from a mounting block. And the initial part of that riding work will usually be in a group. So in other words, it will be riding school order. There will be somebody in the middle, which is basically directing people where to go. So there is what we tend to refer to as a caller. And that caller will direct everybody around the arena, keep everybody safe, and make sure that the commands or requests that you get are clear, and that everybody basically understands what they're being asked to do. In general terms, on the first horse you ride, you will show walk, trot, and canter. The canter work will be as an individual. The walk and trot work initially may be in a riding school type of order, with changes of rein and circles carried out. On the first horse, riders will usually work without stirrups. On the second horse, they will also walk, trot, and canter, and the work on the second horse will usually include some forward position work and some work over trotting poles. Total time is...
Sorry, Julian, did you say the first one they'd work without stirrups?
It is usual. It can be variable. And here, I think, is an example of where the assessor will look at the candidate's riding and make a judgment as to what is best for the candidate. Usually, candidates are better riding without stirrups on their first horse. However, if maybe candidates within a group found that they were taking a little bit longer to just loosen up or work in or just settle into the horses they're riding, then the decision might be made for them to ride without stirrups on their second horse. So it very much is about the assessor looking at the group of candidates and really determining what is best. Where are the candidates going to be able to show their strengths, their riding to best advantage? Usually without stirrups is on the first horse, because that tends to be the sort of the common fact of everybody is usually ready together, but not everybody is. So there are times when somebody might ride without stirrups on the second horse.
No, I might ride without stirrups on my fourth horse, Julian, I think, if it's not a windy day. But are we allowed to ask any questions at this point? I mean, are we allowed to, for health and safety reasons, you know, find out a little bit about the horse? Obviously, the horses are going to be riding school ponies, probably really safe. But, you know, it's still good to know if they do turn around and bite every now and again when you're putting the girth up, or, you know, if they've
there is nothing to stop it. Nothing to stop anybody asking a question at any time during an assessment. What I will often say is just that. Now, if I've asked a question and either the candidate doesn't understand or I've said it badly myself, then I will say, please ask me to rephrase this. If you've got any questions, then please say what they are. Generally, we try to brief the person who's standing in the middle of the school and commanding the ride, because often they've done it many, many times before. So therefore, they're pretty familiar. They'll know their horses, and they will often tell you a little bit about the horse. You know, you're riding this horse and he's quite forward going, and that you're riding this horse and he sometimes needs a little bit more leg when you go into canter or something like that. And it depends how the candidates feel themselves as to what is useful. But we do try to encourage the person who's standing in the middle of the arena to be a little bit on the chatty side, because certainly from my own point of view, it's always been a bit of a mystery to me that particularly people who are preparing for stage one and stage two assessments would have fairly active lessons. So if they're preparing for their stages assessment, the lessons are usually going to be active and a need to know type of basis. And then they go into an assessment and it would be deadly quiet. And therefore that in itself can't feel very relaxing. So I think we sort of take the view that whereby the person in the middle of the arena who's commanding the session and telling you where to go is not there to give you a lesson, but equally is to try and encourage you to ride your horses in the way in which you would want to ride your horses. So it's a bit more chatty and it's a bit more relaxed in its approach, with the view to trying to get as much out of the riders as possible.
Oh, that sounds great. You're going to be really excited. I can't wait to go and do my assessment now. I think there is a little sneaky trick as well, isn't there, that you're allowed to go and have a lesson before you have your assessment, almost like a practice assessment day?
There is no reason why you can't go to the assessment centre and take some lessons before the day of the assessment. And if that helps you to become, you know, just relaxed in that environment and ride some of the horses that would be in the assessment, then that is not a problem.
Because some of us, Julian, go from, you know, a very isolated field environment where we're riding the same horse to suddenly you're in a big yard and, you know, you've got all these horses that you've never ridden before, people you've never met. There's a lot to take on. So it's just nice to be able to familiarise yourself with your surroundings, isn't it?
Yes, I think if you know the surroundings, if you've been to them before and you've had a couple of lessons and maybe you know the staff there, then I think you are going to naturally be more relaxed on the day of the assessment than if you pitch up somewhere where you've never been before and you don't know what everybody does and you don't know, you don't recognise anybody, then you're going to start the day at a disadvantage. So there's absolutely no reason why you can't go to the assessment venue for some lessons and preparation before the day of the assessment.
I guess if you want to feel really, really, confident, then taking a group of ladies with me. So we're all doing our exams at the same time because we feel far too old to be doing this anyway. So we thought if we go together, we can show each other up and we won't be shown up. And it's lovely. So there's going to be three of us. We'll head on down to our local riding school, which I think is Cobb Stables. I think that's the closest one. Quab, yes, and we've been doing it together, and you know, it's been a really lovely experience, and it's been lovely just spending a couple of hours a week with our instructor who's been helping us through, and we've all been pleasantly surprised at not only how much have we learnt, but how much we've enjoyed learning now, way more than we did when we were younger, but equally we didn't get that opportunity when we were younger. So thank you, Julian, for doing this. And, you know, I'm so grateful to the British Horse Society because they've made it so, so simple, you know, with all your books that you've got. I've got, you know, I'm looking now at Complete Horsemanship Volume 2.
Yeah.
You can get it anywhere. You can get it from your website, from Amazon. It's so easily accessible. And then, like you mentioned earlier, your I've forgotten the name of them now. The assessment books. You've got workbooks that make it easy, almost like homework workbooks to work through.
We have.
And then the assessment sheets with our instructor as well. So it is really, really simple. It's literally just a matter of booking it in now.
I mean, I think that the bit of advice I would tend to offer to any candidate going forward for our assessments, particularly from a practical point of view, is take the time to be well practiced across that subject area. I don't know how much work you've done or what you do. I mean, I know a little bit about your background, but it's about just making sure that when you go and put on tack, it's an easy task to do because you're practiced at it and it becomes very straightforward to secure the horse, how you put on the bridle and you deal with the head collar at the same time. And I think the sort of one word of advice I think I would always want to try and give candidates from a practical point of view is do enough practice, because that's not always what you know. It's just that you are familiar with the handling of the equipment and the horse at the same time. So it looks like it's something you do every day of the week, really. And I can't sort of overemphasize that bit enough.
Julian, thank you so much. Thank you for
very
spending
welcome.
The time today talking to us about the assessments and what to expect. If you would like to start your stages or head over and do your assessment, then head to the website bhs.org.uk and we can follow you on Twitter and Facebook too. Thanks so much, Julian.
Lovely. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. As always, you can catch previous episodes of the Horse Hour podcast on our website. Just head to horsehour.co.uk. I love seeing what you're up to. And thank you so much to those of you who have sent me messages lately with lots of ideas for some amazing guests. So we've got some good ones coming up in the pipeline. Can't wait to share them with you. We're just on tentative conversations at the moment. You know, it takes time to get these incredible guests because their competition schedules are so busy, but I'm very excited about the next few weeks, so I'll let you know as soon as I can. In the meantime, keep the ideas coming, because it really is interesting to hear the problems that you're going through with your horses and how maybe, you know, the Horse Hour podcast can help by interviewing some people that maybe have had those issues previously or some veterinary experts. So I really would love to hear the problems that you're going through. Even as well, if you've had a problem and you've overcome it, how did you overcome it? This is a time where I think we need to be sticking together. We need to be helping each other as much as possible. I know that we've got, you know, the Facebook groups and all that education out there, but if we can do our little bit, then I'd love for Horse Hour to be part of that. So you can tag me at Horse Hour, hashtag Horse Hour on any of the social platforms, and you can contact me at horsehour.co.uk as well. So I hope you have a really good week with your horse, and I'll speak to you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.